Okay, good morning, Coach Day. I still good call morning. You Coach Day.
That's fine.
Well, they've covered the questions about your background. And so I'm going to start with your education. And the way I'd like to do this, Coach Day, is just to ask you some open-ended questions. And periodically, I'll ask you to expound upon something you say. If there's something you want to expound upon that you think it will be important or pertinent to the project, feel free to do it. Carl has set this up for an hour, so we'll go there, or we'll set that as a time frame. We may finish early or not, but the goal is to ask you questions and, you know, develop some depth about your experiences as in the Gainesboro community or in Roanoke since you've been here, and how you view things, how things have changed in your life, etc. So that's where we're going with this. Okay. So the first question on education is talk about your school life. For instance, where did you attend school? Did you walk to school, et cetera?
Right. Well, I attended school in Radford, Virginia. I went to a school they call Humbarger Elementary School in Radford. For the first year, we walked to school. It was a couple of miles. And then second year, we went to had a new school in Rapid named Fred Weigel Elementary School, named after one of the state superintendents of school.
Okay.
And we rode the city bus.
Okay.
And after elementary school, I went to Christiansburg Industrial Institute in Christiansburg, Virginia. It was a regional high school, which comprised of kids from Floyd County, Montgomery County, Pulaski County, Rapid City. And we also had a dormitory for girls and for boys, and kids from out of the school district, even out of state came.
Oh,
and
really?
Board there, yes.
Oh, okay.
That was Christiansburg Institute.
Institute, yeah.
Then from that point, I went to Virginia State College at that time, but now Virginia State University.
Right. I'm a mother.
Okay. Yeah. So you're familiar.
Yes, I am.
And then I did my advanced work, master's at Radford, where you are now.
That's right.
Radford, at that time it was Radford College, now Radford University.
Yeah. And Coach Day, during this period, were all these schools segregated during your elementary and on through your undergraduate degree?
Yes, they were segregated at the time.
Okay. How far did you have to go past white schools to get to the various schools you went through in Radford?
In elementary and in Radford, and then when I went to high school in Christiansburg, Virginia, which was Montgomery County, we had to ride a bus. We rode a bus for about 8 miles one way.
Okay. So from Radford to Christiansburg Institute, it was about an 8 mile.
About 8 mile.
8 mile ride.
Yes.
And these were city buses, or did they?
They were school buses.
School buses. Yes. Yellow school buses like today?
Yes.
Okay. And then when you went to Virginia State, I know that's one of the historically black colleges and universities. Right. So up until you finished college, most of your education had taken place in all black environment.
That's correct.
All right. What was your impression of schools? For example, when you were in elementary school, in junior high school, in high school in Radford or in the area, Montgomery County area, did you describe the schools? How were the schools heated, for example, in the elementary schools?
How were they
heated?
Okay. In elementary school at the Humbarger School, it was a little potbelly stove.
Okay.
And the fellows, we have to keep it going.
Okay.
That was one of your unwritten
duties. That's right. Okay.
And then when I got after the first few years in elementary school, we went to Fred Wagner School. It was a new school.
Okay.
So it had a central heating system. Heating.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
And then, of course, it Christiansburg Industrial Institute. They had a lot of, it was a campus style high school, like a college campus, but they had furnaces in each of the individual buildings.
Oh, okay. Okay. So the potbelly stove was in your elementary schools, and then you went to a new high school, and so that did have central.
It was a new elementary school where they had the central.
Okay.
And then from that point on, it was localizing in each building.
Okay. What about your textbooks? Do you remember any conversations? For example, I know when I was growing up here in Roanoke in the late 60s at high school, we used to get books old books from Jefferson, for example, when after the kids had used the books there. Was that something you experienced growing up, or do you remember that, or anybody ever talking about things like that?
Well, as far as I can remember, it never came up.
Okay.
And as far as I can recall, the textbooks were adequate.
Okay.
As far as, I never did hear too much about that.
About that. Okay. So, any other differences between the schools or your education when you were growing up that stand out in your mind?
Well, basically, it was more travel time because the high school, Radford High School, was only about less than a mile from my home.
Okay. Yeah.
So perhaps I could have walked there, right. You know. But we rode the bus, and that was the way it was. So it never crossed my mind to go there. Yeah, okay. You know what I mean? Right. I developed allegiance to the Pittsburgh Institute.
Exactly.
Our nickname was Tigers. And right. So all the little kids in elementary school wanted to be a Tiger.
Exactly.
Just by, you know, so.
Exactly.
I guess from time to time you'd have a flashback.
Sure.
As to what the situation was.
Sure.
Was, but. It never really lingered very long because you were so involved in the activity. You didn't want to miss a day from school.
Okay.
You didn't want to miss an activity. So that was that closeness that you developed.
Sure. Okay.
And I tell you another little sideline is that in Radford, the football team from the White High School, they would always let us in. When they had their game, let us into the game free. The football players, the kids who lived in Radford who played football at Christianburg. And we would do the same for them because we used to play our home games in Radford.
Oh, okay. Oh, that was
so nice. We had a reciprocal arrangement.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they didn't do that here in Roanoke. So that was something pretty unique up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, it's not on here, but since I know some of your history and you just mentioned sports, what sports did you play growing up?
I played football in high school.
Okay.
Basketball and baseball.
And baseball. Now, which was your favorite? I heard you really like baseball.
I did like baseball. Okay. It was, because I liked the others, but I felt that I wasn't large enough to have gone to any level beyond college in football or basketball.
Okay.
But in baseball, I had aspirations to go further.
Further.
And I guess, if I were to pick a favorite, it would have been baseball.
Okay. Now, I heard you initially say you were born in 1934. Jackie Robinson integrated baseball. I think Branch Rickett signed him in 1947 or whatever. And since you were an aspiring baseball player, do you remember how Jackie Robinson signing, did that impact you, or did it have any influence on you at that time?
Yes, it did. I was glad for him, and I was glad for the race. And it opened up another venture and another avenue of success.
Okay.
So I was delighted for him, and I found late on that he was chosen because they felt he could handle it and everything. And I late on discovered that there were perhaps other players perhaps better than Jackie, but they felt they didn't have the complete picture. It was a good lesson in life.
Okay.
And that it takes more than, you know.
Just athletic ability.
Yes,
athletic ability. Yeah. Well, that's right. There were other athletes, a lot of athletes in Negro baseball that were more gifted than Jackie Robinson, and a lot of them sort of resented it. But the fact that Jackie Robinson had gone to UCLA, played football, was All-American football player there, and he just had the, like you say, the social development to withstand the taunts and not to fight and not to respond, at least verbally. I understand that sometimes when he stole a base, he came in with spikes up. There was some revenge there, but at least not overtly. And now, when you went to Virginia State, did you play sports there?
I played football, baseball, and I wrestled.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, good. And the experience at Virginia State was a good experience?
It was a good experience. I feel that if I could have had a more successful career.
Okay. You
know, hindsight is always more accurate.
Exactly.
But I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Okay.
I remember the best advice one of the best pieces of advice I got received prior to going to college was a white banker in Radford.
Okay.
He told me, said, you go there as a football player. And he never played sports. He said, go there in mid-season form and impress the coaches.
Yeah.
That they can't do without you.
Okay.
And which was true.
True. Oh, okay.
And I passed that on to other kids, you know, that I worked with.
Sure. Okay. So you feel like a lot of, you know, for a guy like me who came up through segregated schools and went on to Virginia State like you did, and I've always felt that a lot of the lessons, especially a lot of the character lessons that people like you provided for me when I was coming through school, other people, has served me well as I've gone out into the broader society. Do you share that kind of feeling?
Oh, yeah. A lot of people I know right after high school, I was trying out for the, it was at that time, Milwaukee Braves had a tryout.
Okay.
Camp in Lynchburg, and where they would invite players from the area, you bring your shoes, your gloves, and spikes. And they had about, the scouts from the particular company, the team would assemble there, and you could go there, and they'd have maybe 200 expiring.
Sure.
Professional baseball players there to try out. And it was really, you had to be at your physiological peak in order to excel and get the recognition. So I had gone to one of those that Pittsburgh had, Pittsburgh Pirates, and then Milwaukee Braves.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't successful at that time.
That's okay. Why I
went on to college.
Yeah. Okay. And now, around this time, when you were 20 years old, 1954, the Brown versus Board of Education decision was handed down that said that separate was inherently unequal. Do you remember at 20 any impact of that decision, or did you see it in any way affecting or having an impact on your life?
It changed your thinking because you knew there were going to be some changes.
Okay.
It kind of sent up a red flag.
Right.
That changes are coming.
Yeah.
And you think about the dynamics of change.
Sure.
You knew that there were going to be some new routes to go different places.
Okay.
And it made you aware of, it prepared you for some changes down the road.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, when you think about your life, I mean, you were born in 1934. In 1947, when you were 13, Jackie Robinson signs. 1948, President Truman desegregates the military. 1954, Brown versus Board of Education. So a lot of things were going on in your teenage and early adult life.
That's true.
That really later had an impact on opportunities that you had, decisions you were making, etc. Let's see. I also know, Coach, that you were in the military, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, what years were you in the military?
I was in the military. I entered the service on May the 2nd, 1957.
Okay.
And I was discharged April 23rd, 1959.
Okay.
I went in on the 6-year plan, 2 years of active duty, 2 years of active reserve, and 2 years of standby.
I see. Okay.
And I did not get my commission at Virginia State.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about ROTC.
I was in ROTC for 3 years, but I did not get my commission because I thought I was going to get a baseball contract.
I see.
And if I had gotten my commission, at the time you had to make a commitment of up to 5 years in the service.
Sure.
And I felt after 5 years in the service, I would have been too old.
That's right.
To have done anything.
To pursue a career. Yeah. Okay.
And when I went in the service, a lot of my friends, they were commissioned officers.
Okay.
And I was a non-commissioned.
Yeah. Okay.
And so that was a downside of it.
Sure. Overall, where did you serve? Did you do overseas duty during the period?
I did my basic training in Fort Hood, Texas.
Okay.
And I was lucky. I did my advanced training at Fort Lee, Virginia, right?
Yeah, quartermaster.
Quartermaster, right next door to
Virginia State.
Virginia State.
Yeah.
And then after that, I went to Fort Dix, and we were shipped to Germany.
Okay.
And I was over there for 18 and a half months.
Oh, okay.
And I taught at the Army Education Center, math and science.
Oh, okay.
While I was over there, and officiated ball games over there, and I played baseball and softball. And, we played a lot of flag football.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good experience. Then I went on the service club tours, and I had a chance to see that part of the world.
I see.
Europe, Asia, and Africa.
Oh, okay.
Traveled around on those service club tours. It was a good lesson within itself.
Yeah. I tell you, it sounds like you did a lot in 2 years.
Yeah, it did. Well, you know, we were over there and didn't have a family. And so,
okay.
Amsterdam, Holland, caught the World's Fair in Brussels, Belgium.
Okay.
And went to Copenhagen, Denmark. And,
I see.
A lot of those places. I went to Paris, France, Nancy.
Okay.
Travel around. And
oh, good.
It was a good experience.
Now, as an African-American man in Europe in the late 1950s, how do you feel like you were treated?
You got mixed reactions.
Okay. Okay.
I tell you a little joke we did at the World's Fair in Brussels, Belgium. There was a South African official, a white South African.
Okay.
He was at the World's Fair, and we were there. We had our civilian clothes. Mm-hmm. He asked us, where were we from? We didn't tell him we were in the army. We told him we were exchange students.
Okay.
And we were trying to up our status, you know, because the military was a very important part because, you know, without the military, we wouldn't have peace, you know.
That's right.
So, but we were kind of told a little fib, you know. Sure. We told the gentleman that we were exchange students.
Yeah.
Well, he was nice. We were talking about the different situations in the country and everything like that.
So okay.
It's a good dialogue.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it sounds like.
Then later, as we concluded the conversation, then we explained to him we were GIs. He enjoyed it.
Well, good. Now, when you were teaching in the military, you taught in integrated classes, obviously.
Yes. Okay. Yes. These were soldiers who had not finished their high school diploma.
Okay.
And so we taught math and science so they could finish, get their GED.
Sure.
Okay. And so we taught it during the day, and it was good duty.
Okay.
Classroom and everything.
Yeah.
They call it the Army Education System.
Okay. Okay. It sounds like it was good preparation for your future career.
Yeah.
So you went on, and you got a master's at Radford University?
Radford University.
Now, what year was that?
That was...
Hold on 1 second. The recording button just stopped, and I want to make sure it's... Okay, it started again.
Okay.
Okay. I have to do a little reflecting. Let me see. That was in 1970.
Okay, 1970.
Because I had to have that in order to secure the principalship of Brooklyn.
Okay. So that was in administration?
Administration.
Okay.
And guidance.
And guidance. Yes. Okay. So when you got back from, I've got one other question on here. Did anyone else in your family attend college?
Oh. My sisters, they attended college for 1 or 2 years.
Okay.
And then my brother finished college. Okay. He finished Virginia State also.
Oh, okay. All right.
And he was the editor of the school newspaper when he was down there.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good.
That's my younger brother.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you and your brother were really the first out of your immediate family to finish college?
Finish college, yes.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, good. I know that was a major accomplishment.
Yeah, it was. Yes, I was delighted to that. I was so glad that I was able to do that.
Well, as you were coming up, did your parents emphasize going to college? Or, you know, a lot of black families, even when I was growing up, there was emphasis in some families on going to college. There was some emphasis on, you know, finishing high school and going to work. In your family, what was the situation?
It was a little of both. Okay. My mother and father gave me an opportunity to kind of find our own path.
Yeah.
And then they would support us.
Sure. Okay.
And I always wanted to go to college, and I wanted to try to, as the old Army, be the best that I could be, you know.
Yeah.
And that was eventually. Yeah. My father was a railroad man. He worked for North and West.
Yeah.
51 years. And my mother was a housewife.
Okay.
And my father ran a barber shop.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a farmer. He worked all the time.
Yeah.
He was
multitasking before the term came about.
Yes. And he was good at carpentry, brick masonry. Mm-hmm. And he had a little cute little habit. He'd have me to do a project. If it wasn't done up to his standards, he wouldn't say a word to me. He'd just go and redo it himself. And I would get the message.
Sure, sure.
A nice silent treatment.
That's right.
And it was a good learning lesson for me.
Exactly.
You know, a good approach to use in life.
Sure,
you know, sure. Instead of getting emotional upset, about, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a good learning tool.
Right.
And I use that same technique a lot in schoolwork with kids.
Sure. Well, that's a good way to teach.
Yes.
As opposed to getting really upset and fussing. And
yeah.
Complaining.
Blood pressure up.
That's right. Well, now, yeah, I find that interesting. Your sisters had an opportunity to go to college as well, because at the time, a lot of black women that I was familiar with didn't. The families didn't encourage them to go to college.
Right.
So that sounds like it. You know, there was a lot of focus. So there was focus in your household in education. Continuing that theme, so you got back from you got out of the Army in 1959. You graduated from Virginia State. You had taught in the military. Did you then pursue a teaching career?
Yes.
Okay. Where was that?
Amherst County.
Okay.
In Amherst, Virginia.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And how long were you there?
I was there for 2 years.
Okay. And then, now, I know you got to Addison High School in 1966, because I got to Addison High School in 1966.
That's right.
You were my gym teacher, so I know that.
Yeah.
So between 1961, 62, and 1966, where were you?
I was in Montgomery County. I went back home. I was
okay.
Living in Radford, and I was a principal of Friends Elementary School.
Okay.
In Montgomery County. It's right on 4-6, right out from where Christiansburg High School mm-hmm. is built now.
Okay.
A little small black school.
Okay.
And the Quakers
mm-hmm.
had given that to the black kids
sure.
for the education.
Sure.
And that's how that was established. But I was my first principalship.
Okay.
And I was principal of that for 5 years.
For 5 years.
And I'd come back home, I was just as happy as I could be.
Oh, okay.
And got in a principalship.
Sure. Okay. All right. And then, of course, I have to ask you now, what year did you and Mrs. Day get married?
That was in 1961.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. All right. Now, and so then you left there and you came to Addison. You came to Roanoke in
yes.
1966, right?
They integrated in Montgomery County.
Okay.
And the superintendent had told all the teachers where they were going. The
sure.
janitor, the cook, mm-hmm. and everybody. But they hadn't told me where I was going.
Okay.
And so it's a little period of uncertainty.
Exactly.
So I decided that I'd better try to find
sure.
because I may be receiving something I may not want or something.
Okay.
And all the other principalships in the county were
mm-hmm.
had been filled. And then that's when I applied for Roanoke. I heard there was an opening. And so I applied, and I'm very thankful that I got
you
the job.
You got the job.
Yeah.
Okay. So now you're coming from Christiansburg and Amherst County, more rural places. And you come to the mighty Bulldogs.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And I know you were a guidance counselor over there at Addison as well, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, so what was it like coming to Addison High School? It's huge, all black, sometimes unruly high school. What was that all?
Well, let me back up a little bit now. When I first came out of the Army, I applied for Roanoke City because Coach Price,
sure.
the football coach, mm-hmm. was leaving to go to Fairfax County.
Right. That's right.
And I applied for the coaching job because I had just gotten out of the Army and I thought I knew all about mm-hmm. football and everything. And but Ms. Gibney,
mm-hmm.
who was one of the first female superintendents in the,
sure.
in the state, she told me, she said, Charles, said you don't have any high school coaching experience.
Okay.
Even though you may be very capable of doing mm-hmm. it. She was very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
She said, Roanoke is a football town.
Yeah.
So you need a little experience. And she said, I know where there's an open. That's how I got the job in Amherst, because she had hired the coach
okay.
from Amherst to come to Roanoke.
Oh, I see.
So that
see.
Was a little.
Sure.
I'm going back a little bit.
Yeah.
So when I came to, when the job opened up in Roanoke, then she hired me. And
mm-hmm.
that was 5 years later.
Okay.
And so I got the job. And so when I came to Roanoke, I was delighted.
Mm-hmm.
Because Addison was a big school.
Yeah.
And Roanoke was a large city.
Sure.
And born in Radford, about 10,000 people.
Yeah.
Roanoke, six figures.
Right.
You know,
that's
right. A step up, you
yeah.
know.
Sure.
And so I started off as a physical education teacher,
mm-hmm.
junior class sponsor,
sure.
and assistant football, assistant baseball. I mean, assistant football, baseball coach, and,
okay.
and JV basketball.
Basketball.
So
that's right.
As a little boy said, I was in Hog Heaven.
That's right. Well, good. So now from 1966, and then I heard you say you finished your master's at Radford in 1970, so you could get
this.
So Addison was closing down or being scaled back to a middle school, I guess, in the early 70s. But you left in 70 to become the principal at Loudoun?
Yes. What happened was I was 2 years at Addison coaching, and then Ms. Georgia Brown, who was a guidance coordinator, mm-hmm. left to go into the Upper Bound program at Roanoke College.
Oh, okay.
So they created an opening in guidance. Well, a lot of the staff members were hesitant to apply for the job because mm-hmm. they knew Georgia was coming back.
Yeah, I see.
So me being young, mm-hmm. I tossed my hat in the ring.
Sure.
So I got the guidance coordinator, guidance coordinator position at Addison, which I really enjoyed. Being the guidance coordinator of a large high school.
High school, yeah.
And so it was a golden opportunity, and I was young enough not to fear
mm-hmm.
her coming back, sliding back.
Yeah.
And so I got that job. And so my third year at Addison, I was a guidance coordinator.
Okay.
And so I thoroughly enjoyed
it. Yeah. Okay. And so then you went to Loudoun as that was your first principalship.
First principalship.
Okay. And how long were you at Loudoun?
1 year, because then they closed it.
Okay. All right. And then you went to?
Oh, I went to Addison. I was sitting there at my desk one day. My secretary told me that Dr. Alcorn was on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got the phone, and Dr. Alcorn said, Charles said, I want to appoint you principal of Addison.
Uh-oh.
Would you accept?
Oh, okay.
And I told him enthusiastically, yes.
Yeah, okay.
And he said, okay. So as we concluded that conversation, I sat down there in my desk, and I kind of pinched myself.
Mm-hmm.
I said, yeah, this little country boy has to get out of that principalship.
Right. Yeah.
My first principalship of a high school.
Sure.
I was delighted. And in those days, integration was taking place in the state of Virginia.
Sure.
There were very few black principals, high school principals.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay.
And I was delighted.
Oh, okay.
You know, I was among the few, you know.
Few, yeah.
And I think at that time, I don't think west of Richmond,
mm-hmm.
I don't remember very many being north of Richmond. Okay. There were some from that point on,
eastern part of Virginia.
But so I was delighted. I had to pinch myself, you know. Couldn't believe it. I didn't want him to change his mind.
That's right. Yeah. Well, that was a pretty quick ascension. I mean, you had come in 1966, and by 1971, you were the principal of the school. That's pretty fast rise.
And I think about all the other people that they could have appointed.
Right.
That's the reason why I was grateful.
Yeah.
Because I'm aware there are a lot of talented people in this world.
Sure. Well, maybe getting back to the Jackie Robinson analogy, maybe it was all of your qualities that allowed the superintendent to say, Charles, I want Charles Day for this position.
Well, maybe so. I was really happy with it.
Now, as principal of Addison High School, you began to interact a lot with the principals of Patrick Henry, Jefferson, and Fleming, who were your white colleagues.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, what happened was it was a challenging period because they were integrating and integration in Roanoke City. And they had, at first they thought they were going to close Addison.
Okay.
They were going to make it a vocational.
Right.
A regional high school,
okay,
where they would have vocation and academic offering.
I see.
So myself and a couple of the central office people, we went to Henrico County to observe a school meeting that particular description.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so we came back with the plans of implementing that at Addison because the judge had ordered we were going to integrate. Well, what happened, we worked on that, and then 2 weeks before school opened, the judge gave a decree and stated that Addison was going to open as a comprehensive high school.
Okay.
So we had to go back to the drawing board.
Mm-hmm.
And so we opened as a comprehensive high school. So there was a change of philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we opened as a comprehensive high school.
Okay.
Prior to that, the question you asked about interacting with the other high school principals, the principal Patrick Henry, Jefferson, and Fleming, and Addison, we met to decide, the judge had ordered that it'd be a 75% white and 25% black. And so we had to appropriate the staff mm-hmm. accordingly.
Okay.
And I was a new kid on the block.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were shifting people.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So where we had a predominant black staff at Addison.
Yeah.
We were the major change station.
Exactly.
So we had to go to 75% white faculty, 25% black faculty.
Oh, okay.
So we were shifting people around, you know, to get ready for school opening. So that's how we had a lot of interacting with the other principals.
See, so when you were, the first year you were the principal at Addison, 75% of the faculty was white?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right. And did that raise any types of management or administrative challenges for you?
Yeah, it did, because there were new people. And then the people coming in, they were new to the situation.
Sure.
It was a former all-black high school. Mm-hmm. And they were coming in. So there was pressure on them.
Yeah.
Adjustment. So you had to look at it from, there's a lot of pressure on everybody.
It was. But you guys got through it okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And most of all, like I told the kids at the reunion, that the truly great American were those little kids who were going to the integrated schools.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, the parents and the leaders, they were home.
Right.
It's those little kids.
I see.
You know, black and white kids.
Yeah.
That was the pressure.
Sure.
They're the ones who had the pressure.
Okay.
So we had to make the most of it.
Yeah. Okay. And now, how long were you at Addison?
For 3 years.
For 3 years. And then what was your next position?
Well, they decided that they were going to close two high schools that they didn't need four in Roanoke City.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant that they were going to close Jefferson and Addison and have Fleming and Patrick Henry.
Okay.
And so the superintendent offered me the principalship of Woodrow Wilson Junior High School.
Okay.
Or stay at Addison Junior High School. Or go to Fleming as a co-principal.
Okay.
Or go to Ruffner as principal.
Mm-hmm.
Ruffner Junior. Ruffner was a new high school, air-conditioned, just been built 3 years. So I chose Ruffner.
Yeah, I
didn't want to go to Fleming because I felt it was been hard on.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to be co-principal of a high school.
Sure.
Woodrow Wilson was a little out of the air.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to stay at Addison because it would have been a reflection on that they changed the school.
Mm-hmm.
So then I chose Ruffner.
Yeah.
And I went there and stayed for 12 years.
12 years, that's right. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, good. We'll come back to your more of your education and your professional history. We've covered that pretty well. There's a heading here. Describe your home life. For instance, and I would assume this is when you were growing up. Did you gather around the radio in the evening as a family? Do you remember when you got a telephone, refrigerator, this type of thing?
Yes, we it's hard for the kids to realize it was radio was the media. That's how you listen to your shows.
Sure.
I tell you a cute little thing my older brother used to do. They used to have a radio show called Inner Sanctum.
Okay.
Squeaky Doors.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of like a mystery and ghosts and everything. So he'd turn off the lights and we would listen.
Okay.
And it's kind of silly when you really think about it, but it was entertainment. We'd listen to that radio show. It was a tradition. When that show came on, we'd turn off the lights and we'd kid, little siblings be around. Now that I'm older, it was cute, you know.
Yeah, it was cute. Well, you created your own ambiance.
That's true.
Right?
That's true.
Scary program, cut the lights off. It was like being at the movies.
Everybody
right?
shaking.
That's
nervous. Right. But it was three of us, three girls and three boys. And,
okay.
We got along very well, and my youngest was my brother who lives in Blacksburg, you know. His son's a basketball coach
right.
in Blacksburg.
That's right.
They just won the region golf tournament at Blacksburg High School.
Sure.
So it was three of us. We got along very well, you know, and it was a lot of fun. And now we now reminisce about the good old days, you know. Of course, now my oldest brother and my oldest sister have passed.
I see. Okay.
And a little sideline. I told my sister, my two sisters, my brother, I'm the oldest living one. I said, and we got to reverse that order.
That's right. You don't want to be next in line.
I don't
want
to be next. Yeah. They enjoy that little family humor, you know.
Sure. Well, you know, my father, like your father, worked for the Norfolk and West, and he worked 42 years. One of the interesting things that I always remember about our home life with my father was that, and like your father, he worked at least until I was about 12 or 13, because it was three of us and, you know, children going to college. So and my mother worked, but he also worked a second job. Most of the men that worked for the railroad worked at least one other job, right? And so I was thinking about this question because usually by the time my father got home and sat down for a few minutes, ate dinner, he was going to bed because he had to get back up the next morning to start the routine over. And so our primary time to be together, I guess, was dinner.
Yes.
And of course, and I guess as I think back about my father, the guy was really busy. He never complained about it, but he was a very busy man because he always had something to do and that type thing. And so as far as like, you know, when I was doing things growing up, he was always working. And I heard you talk about your father being, you know, working for the railroad, being a carpenter, and being a farmer as well. So when you were playing sports, did your father and mother have an opportunity to attend your sporting events and things like that?
Well, not as much as I would have liked.
Sure.
My father worked like he did. Yeah. I always wanted him to see the game. I think he saw one or two games.
Right.
But he worked the midnight shift at the railroad from 11 at night to 7 in the morning.
Yeah.
And he was always going and ran a barbershop on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, they worked 7 days.
Yeah.
A lot of people not aware of it.
Right.
7 days on a railroad, you know?
That's right.
And it's something.
That's right.
And let me have a real quick interruption. Yes, I remember your father. He's a good man.
Yes, sir.
He was a very nice man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they worked, and they were really, I know as far as my father was concerned, they felt, because they had railroad jobs, that they were very grateful for those jobs, because a lot of the other black men didn't have jobs and didn't have insurance and that type thing. But they worked.
Yes.
And that was the whole, my father was never late for work. In fact, he was very proud of the fact that he worked for the railroad for 42 years, and he only missed 17 days.
Yeah.
And so they didn't miss work. They really valued those positions. So a lot of the things that one would think about, I played sports at Monroe Junior High School, but my father never got to see me play. I mean, he wouldn't ask off.
Yeah.
I mean, he just, you know, I'd come home and tell him about the games and everything that went on. And he'd be happy for me. But as far as getting off from work, in fact, one of the things, he told all three of us not to ever get in trouble at school so that they would have to call down to the railroad, that he would have to get off. And I guess just before you became principal over at Allison, Julia Moore was there.
Yeah.
And one time we did something that Mr. Moore told us we shouldn't do. We rented a bus and went to a football game.
Yeah.
And he had told us not to do it. So I'll never forget it. He called us over the intercom, three of us, to come to the office that morning. And we went in there, and he told us he was going to suspend us for 2 weeks.
Okay.
Now, Mr. Phillips only suspended you for 3 days, so 2 weeks was like, I mean, wait a minute.
A lifetime.
Yeah, that's a lifetime, even for guys who, you know, weren't that excited about school. But then, as the added touch, he said, and Reggie, I'm going to call your father. He's going to have to come over. He has to call my mother, please, right? But he called him, but he didn't kill me when he got over there. But that was they really valued those jobs, and those men worked. And they worked. And my father's thing was, I'm going to get enough rest at night so I can get up and start this routine the next day. And I never heard him complain about it. He felt like that he was providing for his family.
That's
and
true.
He was trying to, obviously, he set a he and my mother, because she worked, set a tremendous work ethic.
Yeah.
And the family was very important.
That's
and true. Anything you did to distract from the family, that would really get you ostracized,
that's
right?
That's
you
true.
Couldn't, it wasn't a whole lot of extra, so
no,
everything had to be used, and you had to act like you had some sense out
that's
here.
That's true.
Yeah.
It really was.
Yeah. So, let's see. They've got a question here. Do you remember when your family got a telephone or in a refrigerator?
Yes, I remember, because I remember, see, we lived in Rampart. To our rear, about 100 yards, was New River.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a little creek behind there to lead to the swimming pool. So if the New River ever flooded, it would get us. We lived at the end of the street next to the funeral home.
Mm-hmm.
And we would get flooded on two sides, the rear and the side. So we lived there, and the ice plant was right across the railroad. The railroad crossed, the railroad track was in front of us.
Okay.
About 50 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And across the railroad track was the ice plant.
I see.
So it wasn't too difficult. If we missed the ice truck,
mm-hmm.
when they delivered ice,
yeah.
we could just walk across the railroad track and get ice.
Get ice.
So yeah. I remember the ice box.
Okay.
And you had to get it, and you had to chop it up and, mm-hmm. and everything. And we were delighted when we got refrigerated.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It's amazing. Yeah.
yeah.
And the dairy products were delivered.
Mm-hmm.
And I mm-hmm. noticed the article in the paper where they're starting a new cycle.
I saw that. Yeah. You know? Sure.
So, yes, I recall that. Okay. And I remember one of my chores. Every morning I'd have to get up and start the fire.
Mm-hmm.
So my mother could come in and cook
breakfast. Yeah.
That one. And sometime at night, I would bank the fire so that, mm-hmm. I mean, put the paper and everything in so I'd have a shortcut.
Sure.
But I was the first one up.
So that was
that was one of my chores, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And, so then when you got to school early, you had to start the fire in the stove.
In the stove, yeah.
Yeah.
So you had a lot of chores in those days.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. A telephone. Now, do you remember when you didn't have a phone at home?
Vaguely.
Okay.
Yeah, but I do remember when we didn't.
Yeah.
And then I even remember our old telephone number, 2006.
Oh, okay. All right.
But you know, party line, you know.
I was going to ask you, now everybody had a party line because they were cheap, right?
That's true.
Now, this young lady wouldn't know what a party line is, but,
right.
but you could be having a conversation on the phone and another party cuts in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
That's true. That was a common
occurrence. Yeah, it was very common. Yeah. It was cheaper than a private line.
Yeah.
Yeah, so everybody I knew had party lines.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So you could be talking. Coach Dan, I could be talking, and you could pick up and hear our entire conversation.
Yeah.
And even become a part of it if you wanted to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's I was so glad when we got a private line.
Yes,
I didn't know what to do.
Yes.
Question number 11, did you and your family or your friends, I would assume, sit on the porch in the evenings in the summer?
That was the air conditioner. The front porch.
Yeah.
That's true. That was it. Sunday in, Saturday in. And then, you know, that was where you got your air conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
And and it was a social area. You know?
Exactly.
You sat there and we could watch the trains go by.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had a passenger train. And the number was 42.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes through Raff around 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
You see all those people in the cars.
Yeah.
They'd be traveling from one part, going mm-hmm. to New York or Washington.
Sure.
And was in, they'd wave, they see these little kids, you know,
right.
things like that, you know.
Yeah.
They'd be, you know, it's amazing.
Sure.
And you could just check your watch.
Yeah.
You know.
By that train.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Well, we've talked about chores. You know, you banked the fire, you started the fire in the morning, you cut ice for the ice box. Any other chores around your house or neighborhood?
When I was young, I used to would go to downtown to the grocery store to pick up groceries for my mother.
Okay,
she's a housewife. My mm-hmm. dad was working, so I was the main one who, if she needed something,
yeah,
I'd go to
walk to the store.
And I remember a cute little experience I had. I was going to, it was about a half a mile. And we'd walk down the railroad track. And you know, they had those coal trains.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd send us.
Sure. We'd come off the
I got a cinder in my eye. And I was in the store trying to get it
mm-hmm.
out. You know, I walked the store. And a young lady, a young white nurse was in the store. She told me, she told me how to get out, how to make tears. Rotate, you know, she told me, blow your nose.
Oh, okay.
Rotate your eye around.
Yeah.
Counterclockwise, then blow your nose, cycle three times, alternate, and said, create enough fluid, liquid in your eye to wash the cinder out. I remember that always from my child.
Really?
I never knew her name. I would never recognize her. But she told me, she told me, the little fella said, that's how you can get little particles that get into your eye.
Oh, good.
That's amazing.
I never heard of that before.
Yeah, she told me that, and it works.
Yeah, and it stuck with you.
Yeah, it stuck with me. And I was just a little boy, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Coach Day, question 13. What were the family stories that were passed down in your family from generation to generation?
There were a lot of them because I had my mother was the part. There were about 12 siblings.
Okay.
And they had their respective families, mm-hmm. and they would always come and visit. So I had an uncle who worked around the families that had horses and little fairgrounds where they would have show horses.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Everything like so. He would always have his stories about mm-hmm. the horses and which one was the most valuable horse, you know, even like
sure.
the most talented horse, you know, and everything like that. And then I had other uncles who worked for the railroad, you know. They would travel down from Radford to Roanoke
mm-hmm.
to work.
Okay.
In the railroad yard, and they'd leave 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning, so they'd get down here on time.
Oh, yeah.
So they would have stories relating to that.
Yeah.
I had uncles and aunts who lived in West Virginia.
Sure.
So there was it was a dialogue. It was always something
going
on, you know.
Interesting you mentioned that, because, and I mentioned about my father being on time to work, and I probably drive my children crazy about being punctual. But that was something that I know that I got mega doses of. You got to be on time, Rich. You always got to be on time. Was that something that you heard a lot about?
Yeah. I mean, you know, that was a must because, you know, they would let you know, we don't have to wait for you.
Exactly.
That was driven in.
That was driven in, yeah.
Yes, you know.
Yeah, that's something my children, they have a heart, and that's I guess it shows how much society has changed because, again, as an African American, in every institution I was in, from High Street Baptist Church to school to getting to your class to getting everywhere, punctuality.
That's true.
And it prepared you. I mean, there was a preparation for going out into the broader society. And it was almost like, you know, the broader society could never say you were late for anything.
Right.
So you were always there. And if it's anything, I love my children to death, but they seem like to me the biggest procrastinators. I mean, it's just like, you know, they get places, but they don't, like, I was here 20 minutes early this morning, right?
Yeah.
Now, my son, if he was doing this interview, he'd get here 9:05, right? And it would be, and he would be on time. But it was almost, to use a term I've learned since I've gotten older, it was almost this compulsion.
Yes.
But I think it reflected black people, at least felt like it reflected on your character if you weren't on time or if you weren't even a little early for things.
That's true. And it was such a stigma attached
exactly.
to it if you were late.
If you were late.
And you didn't want to be a part of that.
That's right. Exactly. So they have a question on here. Did your family have stories about memories or anything about the Civil War slavery?
Oh, of course, the concept and the world as related to slavery, that was always mm-hmm. common. It was, you could be talking about things, then we'd talk what effect this would have on it.
Yeah.
Not, my dad never liked to bring in the negative because he afraid it would cloud our thinking.
Exactly.
You know, you'd have too much on your shoulder and you couldn't concentrate, you know. I remember one time we went to Cleveland to visit some of my wife's relatives, and they were talking about this candidate who had won the presidency,
mm-hmm.
and some of them were not in favor. You know, they had another favorite candidate. So the word was, I said, regardless who wins, he's your president.
Yeah.
And you have to, the key to your success is what you do.
Exactly.
Not what he does.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I remember when I was principal at Ruffner, a delivery man, he came in one day after an election, a presidential election. And he said, Charles said, did your candidate win? I said, who?
Mm-hmm.
When I won, I said, yeah, my president, my man won.
Yeah.
Because that's my philosophy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that kind of was the philosophy in the family.
Exactly.
Whoever got in, that's your man.
Yeah. Yeah.
And no need worrying about it.
That's right. That's right.
He's in there. You know?
Yeah.
Just make the most of it, you know? And don't sit up there and agonize for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And worrying about something you have no control over.
Yeah. I think that was a general attitude. And I think we talk, I know in my family, I think things were so dire that nobody wanted to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, because it would discourage you.
Yeah.
And so I found that blacks of your generation and previous generations had a lot of faith and a lot of confidence in this country.
Yeah.
And that things were going to improve for us. And they really thought of themselves as Americans.
Yeah.
You know, and so a lot of the almost what some would consider anti-American sentiment or complaining about things that happened in the past is a lot more common with my generation and on than it was with your generation, because I can't think, when I think about this question, I can't think of anybody really having any real negative attitudes about slavery or discrimination. The whole emphasis was, well, it's here and you got to do something about it. Do the best you can do.
Right.
And people had a lot more hope and confidence in many ways in making progress than many of the young kids do today.
Yeah,
because you hear them talking. I know, you know, you've been around kids in school a lot more than I have, but it's somewhat hard to believe the attitudes they have given all the opportunities that are available.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that it was 1920 the way some of them talk sometimes, right? And they can go anywhere, go to any school. I mean, just opportunity. The society is more accepting, and so it's really interesting. But I think a lot of that does come from not using history as an experience, but almost as a cop out not to do.
Well, you know, I remember when I was in the Army, traveling around to different countries on those service club tours. If you see the situation in some of those other countries, you have a fond appreciation for this country.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You really
do.
Now, another philosophy I use, if I run into a person who has a hang up about me or my color, my weight, or my wealth, I balance that off. I'm going to run into about 90% of the people who do not have a problem.
That's right. That's right.
So I'm not going to let that one or two distract me or get me on a detour.
Exactly.
So I just chalk that up as par for the course.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, I think that's the way to look at it.
Yeah.
I really do. And that way, that one person doesn't upset you.
That's true.
Okay, well, we have questions here. We got about 5 minutes, Coach Day, left. We talked about Ms. Day. We know you served in the military. I know you have 2 children. Neither one served in the military, right?
No.
Okay.
No, they...
Yeah. Let's see, community. When you moved to Roanoke in 1966, what was your general impression of Roanoke, the black community, the broader community, things like that?
I had a very favorable impression of them. I thought about the number of doctors and lawyers and professional people they had, you know, in Roanoke. It was a new experience for me because I had come from a small city in Radford.
Mm-hmm.
And you get down here and you see all the black hospitals, and the number of doctors and lawyers, and then it had a lot of good jobs and everything.
Thing,
so
yeah.
It was it's a very positive experience.
Okay, good. What about this library? Do you remember the first time you knew the Gainsborough Library was here, or did people talk about it when you got here?
Yeah, I was. I used to come down this area a lot because that was a focal point.
Sure. You know?
And even before I moved to Roanoke, we should come down to the American Legion Auditorium.
Yeah,
when the top performers would come here.
Exactly.
And then I had some friends, because when I went to high school at Christiansburg Institute, we used to play Addison.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And in football.
Oh, I see.
So then I had some friends here in Roanoke, and we would come down and go dance, and then we'd go to the train station.
Mm-hmm.
They had the train station where you'd go there, you could be served
exactly
food you wanted and everything.
Yeah.
And so I had good vibrations
about Rona.
About Rona.
Oh, okay. Yeah. There's a question on here, Coach Day. Who were your role models when you were growing up, and also if you when you got to Rona, who did you sort of look at as a role model?
Well, I've always liked people.
Okay.
And I would see these. Maybe. Don't think I'm materialistic.
No, it's fine. Yeah.
But these people that had all this wealth.
Sure.
As a little boy, something I always wanted.
Sure. Sure.
I haven't achieved it yet. I'm ready for the graveyard. I still have that as a hidden
sure
goal, a hidden sure agenda, they sure say. And so I really admired those people who were very successful.
Exactly.
And I respected those people who were trying to be successful, mm-hmm, you know. Mm-hmm. And like one of the gentlemen told me, he said, a very successful businessman, he said, when you go into business, said you talk with the people who are successful.
Yeah.
You also talk to those who were not successful. Successful. You can learn from both.
Both, right.
You know what I mean? And so, but I guess I was amazed at how the families that had all the drugstores. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah.
The president and CEOs of the big banks.
Yeah.
And, the big firms, you know
sure
what I mean?
Exactly.
The college presidents. I remember I had a hidden agenda. I wanted to be a president of a small black college. That was one of my goals.
Oh, okay.
I never achieved it, but you know.
Yeah.
I never achieved it, you know what I mean? But that was, I suppose if I had maneuvered.
Sure.
But that was one of my.
Yeah. And the men who, most of those people were men there, they inspired you.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Well, those are good role models. I mean, when you see people achieve in areas that you didn't know people were achieving in.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, they can inspire you because you think, well, how did they got to do that?
That's true.
Yeah.
And I would ask them.
Ask them, yeah.
I'm not trying to get personal.
Sure.
I'm trying to get nosy.
Sure.
But you can learn something
exactly
from them, you know?
Certainly.
That's one thing make America great. They will talk with you.
Yeah.
They will pass on good health plans. Yeah. I mean, when I had surgery one time, a little sideline, I was reading this book. I carry, you know, like when you're going for surgery,
mm-hmm,
you carry a lot of reading material.
Sure.
I read this book about this agent, this Russian agent who had come to America. He's a double agent.
Mm-hmm.
One thing he said, you learn from all kinds of, he said, one thing about America, people will talk with you.
Yeah.
And they will tell you things.
Sure.
Sometimes even personal.
That's right.
And he said, even the agent said they gave information on this factory. This
right
plant, you know.
Just give you the information.
Give you information, you know.
Yeah.
And you learn a lot.
Learn a lot, yeah.
And I remember when I was at Virginia Western as a counselor for a couple of years,
mm-hmm,
I was teaching an orientation class and then a house study class. And I did a little research, and I always told my kids, I said, you have 2 ears and 1 mouth. And use them accordingly.
Right.
That's right.
That's a good advantage. Well, in closing, is there anything else that we didn't cover that you would like to share with us about your life, your experiences?
Well, I was on the school board for 11 years,
that's
and
right,
9 months of a beautiful experience.
Okay.
I felt because I had taught for all those years and I'd been in education that I could make a contribution. So I appreciate the opportunity that Roanoke City gave me, mm-hmm, to serve on the board. I enjoyed working with the kids and the teachers and everything and the parents. And that just further added a little icing on the career.
Yeah, that you found that experience very fulfilling.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
It was. I learned quickly that when you're on a committee, you can't pull things through unless you have majority vote.
Yeah.
You can influence things depending.
Right.
Sometimes more than others,
sure,
you know. But it was a challenge. And but I enjoyed that.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Well, Charles Day, I've known you for the past 40 years.
Oh,
and
you've been
good influence in my life, and I'm glad I was able to conduct this interview with
you.
Well,
it's my pleasure. And like I said before, I remember your very sweet mother. She was really a nice lady and a beautiful lady.
Yes, she was.
I remember a little sideline. I was principal of Friends Elementary School, and I had a teacher, Miss Dow.
Oh, yeah.
And my mother came by the school one day to visit me, and Miss Dow told me, said, Miss Stacy, you and Albert have some beautiful mothers.
She was talking about herself. Because her son name was Alvin. Right. But she was.
She was beautiful. Yeah, the Dow women
and,
were very attractive.
She was a very attractive. And not the beauty contest, well, not, you know, but, and your father was really nice, quiet.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Very quiet gentleman.
Yeah. Yeah,
tall. He's about 6'3", wasn't he?
Yeah, 6'4".
I knew he was tall.
Actually, my son is big like my father.
He is?
Yeah, he's 6'4".
Yeah, he played basketball, didn't
he? Yes, sir. He played basketball. Yeah. And a lot of the men, my father lived in Salem, so he was a big basketball star up at Carver.
Okay.
And he and Urban Kennedy were always competitors.
Okay.
And they were also good friends. But this was after my father had died, and Malik was about 14 or 15 years old, and they had the court basketball camp over at Addison.
Yeah.
And Urban Kennedy walked in there one day and looked at me and looked at my son, and he said, "That's not Elmer Thomas's child." And he does that. Every time I look at Malik, he favors my father more and more every day.
Okay. Yeah. It's amazing. Small world.
Yes, sir.
You've done quite a good job. I'm proud of you.
Well, thank you, Coach Day. I appreciate that.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Pleasure seeing you.
All right.
Thank you, young lady.